Secondly, and really most importantly, was increasingly better material conditions for the majority of the population. This meant, for example, free medical care of a decent quality for all citizens. Quality was not great, certainly not the sort that the elite had. One could, if you had extra money, make a private, though technically illegal, arrangement with a doctor. But still, adequate care was available to everyone at no cost. So adequate, in fact, that many Russians today look back at those times as times when they had much better health care than today. Unemployment was virtually non-existent. It was virtually impossible to fire a worker. And if for some reason your boss fired you because you were so terrible, the state promised to find you a new job. At retirement, everyone was given a state pension. You didn't live easily on this pension, but it was high enough to keep the elderly housed, clothed, and fed. Housing was often cramped. It was often substandard, but rents were subsidized and cheap, and new houses were being built all the time. Food, especially bread and dairy products, were also subsidized. And indeed, the quality of bread, key to, you'll recall, the revolution, the demand for bread. Bread was especially subsidized, and the quality was actually quite good. Finally, there were major improvements in the consumer economy. Indeed, one of the defining characteristics of these years, at least until the early 1980s, was a continual increase, though at an uneven rate, in both production and per capita consumption. Though there were warning signs of future trouble, already by the late 1970s, the rate of growth of consumer per capita consumption began to decline. And by the 80s, there was complete stagnation. More on this later. Until then, though, the standard of living for the majority of the population grew steadily throughout the 1960s and 1970s. Wages and salaries increased, and there was little inflation to cut into them. Food supplies improved. In fact, studies have indicated that the amount of protein in the Russian diet increased in these years, and the amount and variety of consumer goods increased. New housing was also built. It wasn't of the best quality. It often involved long blocks, rather grim blocks, of poorly constructed apartment buildings on the edges of major cities. But still, it was better than the old komunalki, the old communal apartments that had been the norm for most city dwellers before the 1960s. And finally, what formal economic channels couldn't handle was often satisfied in what was called the second economy, or the black market, or the unofficial economy. Here one could find various foreign products that could not be found in official stores, jeans and calculators and record tapes of music and clothing and alcohol and foreign currency, which helped you buy these things. One could find in the black market all sorts of illegally manufactured goods. A collective farmers, often in their non-working time, produced handmade goods, especially during the winter, which they then sold on this illegal market. One could find scarce Soviet goods, and most Soviet goods were indeed scarce, especially consumer goods. One can find them because they were often legally purchased by somebody who saw them for sale in large numbers and then resold them. Technically illegal, but an important place for finding scarce goods if you're willing to pay more. Also, the black market featured goods that were obtained illegally. For example, by truck drivers who would stop on a quiet road out of the way, pull a few goods off, hand it to their compatriot, and later sell it on the black market. Even managers of stores sometimes took a few things out the back door to be sold on the black market. And services, moonlighters of all sorts, plumbers, carpenters, doctors, even acupuncturists could be found during these years serving for a personal payment. It's in fact estimated that something like 25% of the GNP of the late Brezhnev years was part of this illegal market, especially by the early 1980s. The Brezhnev regime tolerated this illegality, for it served a clear economic and indeed social purpose. Big profiteers were sometimes arrested and executed, but the whole system itself was part of this social contract, this welfare state that had been established. Now, to understand what all this means in terms of people's everyday personal experience, one needs to reverse the focus a bit. Not on what the state did to try to ensure popular support, or at least tolerance, but on how people, Soviet people, experienced all this, and how they express their needs and their desires.